Hello and welcome to Art is Everything, the 2024 Astrology Studio for the sign Cancer, Sun, Moon, and Rising. I'm Eric Francis Coppolino, your friendly neighborhood astrologer here. I have been preparing this reading for a couple of weeks in the form of getting horoscopes written out until August, so I have seen many permutations of the solar return chart for Cancer, and I am going to present this information to you in the most organized possible way. Before I get into the theme associated with the title of the project, just first a brief word about why I have returned to working in audio. Some people like the video readings. I am not especially a fan of doing video. A lot of noise coming in from outside. I wonder what that is. Not a fan of doing video, particularly for astrology. The reason being that when I'm working in video, I have to be aware of my camera presence, which means how I sit, the expression on my face, making eye contact with the camera. Essentially staring at myself, and I find this to be a tremendous distraction from the rather sensitive and complex content of the reading. My eyes belong on the chart, not staring at my face or at a little green light. And so I am pretty much ending the project of doing video readings, at least for now, though I will make some kind of an introductory video for this, and I will show you the chart, and then I will end the video lasting a few minutes, and then I will post the chart that I'm looking at, which is a kind of a composite of many of the most salient events of the Cancer solar return season for 2024, and then what I know about what is coming in 2025. And then I have been doing an afterthoughts session once the inspiration strikes me, or if I get questions from people. And I would remind you that I am very responsive to reader questions and concerns. And for example, in the case of the Gemini reading, I had one person write to me and say they were having difficulty following what I was saying. And just one person's query led me to do a half-hour follow-up reading that I connected to the rest of the project. So I encourage your involvement, your questions. You're not bothering me. Doing this work is a central purpose of my life. And I am aware of the problem of everyone being so damn busy that no one has a moment to grant hardly anyone else a stress-free moment of conversation. It's like everybody's always running someplace. And with all the work I do, I strive to be fully present in that work and to never give the feeling that I've got to run off somewhere, so sorry, see you later. There, that is my part of my work ethic. So in terms of Art is Everything, there was a funny moment a couple of weeks ago that kind of encapsulated the nature of that theme, of that concept for me. As you may know, I am fairly well, I don't want to say stitched into, but let's say well familiar with the political community in my area. This is from on and off living here, going back to the late 1980s and spending much of my time doing various forms of political journalism and being involved in elections and covering significant community events and getting dragged through the papers every now and then and all kinds of things. So I know a lot of the people in the political community. And one day I was walking down Fair Street and found this kind of power duo that I occasionally run to at restaurants. We seem to have the same taste in restaurants. They were at this French restaurant called Canard en Chine, and I stopped to speak with them. The woman in the power duo was the widow of the long-term state assemblyman and congressman, Maurice Hinchey, So he served in politics for about 40 years, held public office, I think 20 as an assemblyman, 20 as a congressman. And his wife is a powerful ex. His widow is a powerful lobbyist. And she was having dinner with someone who served in the state assembly for 30 years, the same seat that that Maurice had held. So these people know me, and you know, I have to stop and say hello when I see them. It's just appropriate to do so, and good for everyone. So I was wearing. I'm going into like the making button art, like pin art buttons that say things like "I am my lover" and "Don't think about my vagina" and various other little pranks and things like this that. I'm leaving in buttons at the LGBTQ center and things like this. So they, one of them, the lady comments on one of my buttons and she's a little bit dismayed by it. And the conversation proceeds. And I say to the gentleman, you know, again, who I have covered on and off since 1992 or so, the difference between you and me is, you view the world through a political lens. He's still in government. And this holds true for the lady as well. I look at life as an artist. And then there was this moment, there was this moment of understanding. And the difference between viewing life through a political lens or a business framework or some structured means of negotiating power and this kind of thing versus viewing life as a creative exploration. And as much as a journalist as I am and as deep in over my head as I went on the COVID thing, I did it as an artist. It doesn't mean that I'm painting in watercolors. I mean my work as a journalist is meticulous. But by artist, I mean that I take an inherently creative approach to what I do. And while I don't want to say pleasure-seeking approach, one of the things I learned from some of the most effective activists and journalists I'd ever known, involved in attorneys, involved in the movement to rid the world of PCBs and dioxins and to hold Monsanto accountable, was have fun doing everything. Make every last thing and get enjoyable. And I know some things are difficult, like sitting in a 2-hour traffic jam on the Long Island Expressway, right? That's a little bit hard to turn into art. But, you know, my music library was connected. I just couldn't get out of the car and take pictures. That would have made it more fun. But most things, almost everything, can be approached from a creative standpoint. What do we do with this? Everything is a kind of a blank canvas. And that is the approach that I am encouraging for the sign cancer in all of its forms. And that's partly owing to activity in the sign Pisces, with Saturn still there, because the presence of the sign Pisces for cancer, I mean, Pisces pretty much undeniably not necessarily related to personalities, but the well of creativity in the zodiac, the delta of Venus, the ocean that refuses no river, the place where you can take a drop of seawater and you can find 80 elements. It is Pisces is the ultimate artist palette, the ultimate artist supply store connected to a Staples, you know, connected to like a closed taco bar that you can eat it in the middle of the night. And Saturn is there. And what Pisces represents for Cancer is the frontier of growth, the spiritual connection to the universe, the concept of higher self or of God, whichever you prefer. And this is very important to understand the nature of the ninth place, because the ninth place is where we seek something beyond the constraints of life that we are given as children. And unfortunately, with the ninth house, most people find the strictures of religion, the limitations of the closed-minded things that religious leaders say to them, and that parents, who most of whom have done very little spiritual work, given the fact that they take up the task of bringing a new human life into the world, a new life that could be anyone into the world, most parents have done next to no spiritual work. The growth that they experience has all been the school of hard knocks. And to have Pisces on the ninth means that you have room to explore. You have room to maneuver. You have the possibility that you could envision yourself as anything. The sign Cancer, by the way, and I wrote about this in last week's essay, which I should attach. That would be the 620 lead, as it's called here in Planet Wavesland. Talks about the chart called the Thema Mundi. It is a candidate for the oldest document in Greek astrology. It's a key to understanding the entire astrological wheel in one chart called the Thema Mundi. It has Cancer rising, not Aries rising. And so there is something orienting and oriented on a deeper, wider reality about the nature of the chart cast with Cancer in the first place. That's what you've got. And there is therefore something inherently connected about associating the sign Pisces with spiritual possibilities. Most quote-unquote natural charts, it's Sagittarius. And that Sagittarius is almost like, well, it's kind of Pisces turned sideways. And I won't get into a compare and contrast, but let's say that it is very helpful to have Pisces on the ninth place because it speaks of the possibility that you contain the thing that many people think exists outside of themselves. Now, you have Saturn working its way through this territory. Saturn is not given to the idea that that there's very much room to grow. Saturn can feel like you're in a tight place. But you've had Neptune working the ninth house since 2011, and this is amorphous. There is like an overwhelming amount of potential. There is, it is very easy to get lost. It's almost like getting turned loose with a blindfold in the New York City subway system. To have Neptune in Pisces in the ninth. And so Saturn has come along and put up some boundaries, some flood walls, some high ground, something solid to grasp onto, to step up upon. And there is another element that is currently in an exact conjunction with Saturn. It's a centaur, similar to Chiron, dedicated to healing process, called Nessus. And this conjunction is going to last well into early 2024. And essentially, it is about taking an extraordinarily high level of responsibility for the things that you believe, for the things you invest your faith in, and for your own spiritual vision. And there's also an acknowledgement of how much of spirituality is just a trap. It can be an ego trap, it can be a fear trap, it can be a negativity trap. And so to say that the buck stops here, this is the high level of accountability. The buck stops here. I've written this in pencil around the rim of the ninth house there. The buck stops here. So that you remember that ultimately you're responsible for where you invest your faith. And it is no small matter where you invest your faith. It's one of the most important decisions you make with your entire being is where and how you invest your faith. And so Saturn is and Nessus together are on a kind of a cleanup patrol of the ninth house to get you to really go through your beliefs, your concepts about life, everything else that would be in that general category of beliefs, concepts about life, concepts about your relationship to the universe, because prior to Saturn's arrival last year, these things may have gotten a little bit out of control, and Neptune has an overflowing the edges, anything goes kind of a quality to it. And one of the most important things about this solar year for you is that both Neptune and Saturn are going to be moving into Aries together, the 10th place. And I'm going to come back to that in a moment or later on. I'm not sure. I don't work from an outline to do these readings. I just kind of go around the wheel. But this is a tremendous shift of emphasis from something that is seemingly theoretical, the ninth house, and you know, it includes the great libraries, universities, and many oceanic kinds of things for you all related to your relationship to existence, whereas the 10th house is about your relationship to the material and political structures of society, including all matters of business, all matters of your reputation, and consistent with one of my favorite one-word delineations from the ancient approach to astrology, praxis, P-R-A-X-I-S, action. And so the overall general movement in the 24-25 solar year is a movement from experimenting with ideas and with theory, and cleaning up the edges of your personal philosophy of life, and maybe even shifting entirely your philosophy of life, which reminds me of all of a certain variety of books that I moved out of my library and into storage on Saturday. I'm Cancer rising, having made a major decision to no longer work with one particular philosophy. So that kind of cleanup act, that kind of like, okay, this thing maybe worked to get me so far. I see what I needed. I have an understanding of what that was about. And now I can see that there is a better approach. That's the kind of thing that it is wise to be doing in these final months before Saturn and Neptune enter Aries, form a conjunction on the Aries point, and essentially the somewhere in between phase of life for you is over, and you are firmly and distinctly in the new country, where your role in the world is going to be more visible, more relevant, more important, higher pressure, and where your approach is going to shift from a theoretical approach to a practical approach. And this will be much easier to grasp when it is happening. And he's like, oh, that's what the neighborhood astrologer was talking about 6 months ago. Wow, this is, I suddenly have a lot more responsibility on my hands, and I kind of like it. It kind of is very helpful. There you go. So we're going to come back to that. But bear that much in mind, that there's a cleanup time for you philosophically. Your ethics, very important to be going over your ethics and understanding what motivates your ethics, and distinguishing that from the overbearing horseshit morals that these religions with theological documents that fill libraries, but a Bible that's only 1,500 pages. You shouldn't need a library of theological documents to explain, just speaking in terms of the Christians, I'm one of those people who thinks that the red letters in the Bible, you know, that some Bibles are the words of Jesus written in red letters. Gee, how many words are there? Not very many. 1,000 words. You don't need any more than that. But suddenly, you know, you've got these massive compendiums and concordances and lectures and theological seminaries and all of this stuff, making what should be very simple into something very complicated. And now is the time to cleanse that complexity, to see the most important spiritual principles you live for what they are, and to make sure you can sum the whole thing up in 50 words or less. There's a reduce quality here with Saturn. Okay, that said, the energy of your chart, pardon if that sounded like an interruption, it was very brief. The primary emphasis of your charts in the 2024-25 year is in several houses. And the house astrology is read by house. That's what makes it coherent. And the most significant houses that your astrology is taking place in are House 10, where Neptune and Saturn join Chiron and Eris, and suddenly you become a much more prominent figure in the wider world of human affairs and human activity. And this is really big. This should get a book. I have no idea what other astrologers are saying about this. If you happen to check the work of other astrologers, which I don't, and you see anyone saying anything interesting about this configuration forming in Aries, please let me know. Now, for you, Aries lands in the 10th solar place. Praxis. Action. Let me come back to that. Relationship to authority and government. Good. Next. Then there is very important activity in houses 2 and 8. This is financial affairs, transactions with other people, money, and investments and inheritances, 2 and 8. In house 2, Mars will be retrograde later in the year, right as the year ends. I think December 6th, Mars goes retrograde in Leo. And so this is advisory of a certain kind of a financial procedure I think might be wise to follow. House 8 is dealings and affairs with others. Matters of taxation, finance, any place where your money becomes transactional with the money of other people. It also, in a significant way, I don't mean shopping at the supermarket or things like that, but involves loans, it involves anything big enough to show up on your tax returns. And it also involves affairs with the in-laws. And it involves matters of legacy, wills and trusts, and you're going to have Pluto there for 20 years. So we're going to get used to this and what it's like to have Pluto on the eighth house. And one of the bottom line messages of Pluto anywhere in the zone of projection, which you have had since the late 1970s, because the zone of projection is the four signs approximately opposite your first house. It's Scorpio, Sag, Capricorn, Aquarius. So basically anyone with Cancer rising or Cancer sun is living with Pluto in this zone of entry into the chart, seemingly from outside. So house 10, matters public, reputational and action. Houses 2 and 8, all things related to finance. And house 7, relationships. So it may take me some time to go through this. I am going to take a little pause. I'm going to stop the recording and save the file and add a moment of theme music in between the little session, something I can't do in video too easily. And I'll be back with you in a moment. And we are going to start going over these houses. And let's start with house 7, the primary house of relationships in partnerships. For the past couple of weeks, I have been writing about the Cancer Capricorn axis, partly in honor of the Northern Solstice and the Sun's journey through the sign Cancer. But I've also been writing about a group of planets gathered at currently between 4 and 8 degrees of Capricorn, your opposite sign, in solar astrology, the relationship house. And this is quite a setup, and I'm going to have to summarize. I will connect the written materials in case you want to know about this, but I'm calling this the Capricorn group. And the Capricorn group consists of a diversity of minor points. They're all minor planets. Only one of them is an asteroid, Ceres, the first asteroid. The rest are, one is a centaur. Two are objects in the realm of Pluto or slightly beyond, all orbiting our sun, by the way. And then one of those odd planets without a body with a very long orbit called Cupido. And they all have one thing in common, which is that they are associated with family. They're associated with various versions of either multi-generational effects, origin stories, mother-daughter relationships, gathering points for festivities, and then in the case of Ixion, a king of Greek mythology, king of the Lapiths. I don't have all these Greekish little nations from way back in the day, all these toga people sorted out. But the Lapiths were one of those thing, you know, one of those societies, and. The king of this society kills his father-in-law, taken by Zeus to Mount Olympus for rehabilitation, hatches a plot to rape Hera. Talk about a bad idea. Well, so this whole group is gathered together in early Capricorn. It's been forming for years. But what happens, like a lot of things in 2024, is that it comes into prominence because a nearby planet comes into the group. And that nearby planet is Ceres, currently a dwarf planet, previously thought of as a planet, as a comet, as an asteroid. It seems to have gotten every possible designation for what it might be. And it is now retrograde. It passed through the territory in March, and now it's because it's retrograde, it's going to stop and park for much of the summer here in the Northern Hemisphere. And When the quick movers come through, make aspects to the slow movers, it makes everything more tangible. It brings things into the emotional, palpable realm of experience. And in this palpable and emotional realm of experience, the point of focus is the relationship between mothers and daughters. Now, the world is, Western civilization is currently under the thrall of a completely contorted, distorted feminist ideology. And among the things that this completely distorted, contorted version of feminist ideology has done is obscure the nearly supreme power of relationships between mothers and daughters. And in many ways, these relationships run the world. I'm not here to debate the point. I'm here as an observer and as someone who has done close to 2,000 readings for women. And I have made a study of the relationships between mothers and daughters throughout my clientele and throughout my travels and as a son raised under matriarchy. And among the things I still agree with that Simone de Beauvoir wrote is that ultimately it is mother-daughter relationships that perpetuate this evil phantom known as the patriarchy. That it is not generally men who are recruiting women under the thrall of the patriarchy, but rather mothers who are preparing their daughters to be wives, treat men a certain way. And we're told this is changing, but I think things have gone backwards, not forward, since the 1950s. I think that we're on these matters, on the matters of the integrity of relationships between women and men, the integrity of familial relationships, the integrity of relationships between parents and children. I think that it has been a massive downward slide since the 1950s. And in the case of Ceres, we're not talking about political relationships. We're talking about emotional conditioning and the defining of womanhood by mother. And that die is cast by age two. It is cast, the 9 months in vivo, in utero, whatever you want to think of it, one's the Nirvana album and one's a laboratory term. You need a better term for this. Highly formative because we are listening to our mother's voice, and hearing is the first sense organ to fully form and may be the first cognitive organ to fully form. So, and water conducts sound. And so we are listening to our mother's voice vibrating for 9 months, the words she uses, along with all of the emotions she feels. If you're wondering why anyone is the way they are, look to what the mother was going through during her pregnancy and in the first 2 years when the baby's brain is forming, because only so much brain can get out, only so much skull can get out, and no matter how much you squeeze it and the fontanelles squishing and all this stuff, the brain is growing for at least 2 years. It's not mature till it's 18, but it's rapidly growing in the first 2 years. The limbic system is forming. Look at the conditions of the mother during pregnancy and the conditions of the early life, the first 2 years. And this, as we all know, in most cases, of most of the people listening, is a complete mess. And it seems that there is very, very little that we can do about it. There is a very good book called A General Theory of Love, which, by the way, ends up advocating medication that is no longer righteous. I never agreed. I took a lot of shit from my readers for talking about the problems with SSRIs. But everything else in this book is at least instructional as to the way that we can make changes, the way that the things we need to make changes from are what they are and what the changes mean. Meanwhile, so Ceres, which represents relationships between mothers and daughters, the grief bonds between mothers and daughters, the attachments between mothers and daughters, which affect everyone, whether you're male or female, because if you're a man, you're dealing with women all day long, and if you're a woman, you're dealing with yourself and your mother and women all day long. There's no escaping this. So Ceres enters this territory and stays here. Well, what's the territory? The territory is like the best visualization I have is like kind of a Pandora's box image where you open the box and like everything comes out. Well, this is everything coming out For in the case of Pholus, the past four generations, the genie that cannot be stuffed in, back in. In Quaoar, Quaoar, I'm not sure which, Q-U-A-O-A-R, anybody know how to pronounce that? The story of origin back to the beginning. In the case of Ixion, the behavior of certain ancestors, the absolutely seemingly unforgivable, intolerable, amoral behavior of certain specific ancestors who may be rare in the family pattern, but at least one is there, and maybe the evil of that one was overstated, and there was an overreaction to that, and that shaped everything, but that's in the mix. And then the way that I'm thinking of Cupido, we've got Apollon and Scorpio, Cupido, one of these odd planets without a body, is that's a gathering point, generally, and the artist in the family. That's probably you. By the artist in the family, I mean the person who is sensitive and not proceeding under a business plan, who's proceeding under a desire to live, a desire to enjoy your life, a desire to experiment, a desire to relate to people in a way that is your own, that is sincere. Though Apollon generally represents gatherings of all kinds, particularly celebratory, social, and this kind of thing. It's not the other TNPs relate to the for science and trade. That happens to be in Scorpio right now. But for pleasure, love, friendship, familial gathering, that's Apollon. Well, that instinct continues to exist even when they're. When Ixion is at the party, the murderer, rapist, but either when Pholus, the people who have been impacted by generations of alcoholism, is there, and Quaoar is there, talking about how, well, two elements to Quaoar. One is the family story of how it got here, which, by the way, is always bullshit. There's always some central fundamental lie in the this is what the family is doing here. Like, this is how we got here. If you want to understand how the conditions under which your family emigrated from Sicily, go there and stay for a while and don't take the tour. Just hang out. And this, all of this, is like this Pandora's box door open in your house of relationships. This is a very good time to take these types of relationships represented by the seventh house, generally partnership-oriented and or marital-oriented relationships of the allegedly monogamous kind, and make them a subject of therapy rather than a kind of a thing that you do because, oh, now's a good time to get married. I think that nearly at every wedding I go to, and I do not go to many, I think the last one I went to was like 25 years ago. No, I went to one fairly recently. One. Not more. Everyone needs like 5 years of therapy to make up their mind about whether this is the right thing. The thing with Quaoar is that it is the myth of Quaoar is a dancing creation myth. And so with Quaoar, the way that I envision this is, it is the rhythm and the dance that was already going on when you were born, and that's what everyone was already doing, so you did it too, because that's what everyone was already doing. You didn't really have any choice. You're born into this family. It's a little like Steve Martin. I was born a poor black child. If you haven't seen that scene lately, you know, the poor guy's white. He can't dance. But we're all a little like that Steve Martin. I was born a poor black child. When he's lily white, you know, blonde hair. And we might be able to do the dance. We might not be able to do the dance, but that's all we think exists. That's all we think exists because that's all we knew about, particularly in those formative years between T minus 9 months and T plus 2.5 years, when the brain is forming, when our piano is being made and the strings being assigned their keys and tuned, and some get screwed down and some don't get screwed down. And some people can play all 88 keys. It's very rare. And some can only play like 16 out of the 88 keys. This is all going on from T minus 9 months to age 2, 2.5. Well, Ceres, to me, brings a kind of a... It's an expository experience that will demonstrate the true nature of this reality and the bonds of attachment that are formed and all that there is about them. I mean, think of the diversity of influences. This amoral murderer would-be rapist. He doesn't actually rape Hera. He ends up raping some clouds that she puts there to look like herself. Quaoar, this dancing drumbeat of all eternity back to the beginning of time. Pholus, so affiliated with alcohol. I mean, try to imagine the amount of influence that dependency on alcohol, covert, overt, outright alcoholism, shit-faced, fall-down drunkenness, and coping with problems, quote-unquote coping, really setting aside, only being possible with alcohol. My God. And then the poor little Cupido just wants to be an artist, just wants people to hang out and have some fun. But that's what we're here for. Well, one would think. We do a lot of getting caught in the churning, bubbling cauldron of karma. So Ceres moves into this, and this is a defining feature in your chart. And the question that Ceres, in the midst of all of this Pandora's boxiness coming out of your house of partnerships is, what the holy living fuck have I been through? Why exactly have my relationships been what they are? How many times were these people married? What was I looking for with the partners in my life? How old am I today? How many times have I even come near that? And look, maybe you're one of these people who is absolutely settled in a relationship with a partner you love. I will tell you, you are very fortunate if that is the case in your life. You are fortunate on a astronomical scale. I think that marriage could be a beautiful thing. I think that people go into it not only unprepared, but largely go into it with so much unresolved baggage. It's amazing that any marriage has a day happiness past the honeymoon. And this is largely concealed from public consumption. So what I'm seeing is a major reevaluation of your relationships. Major. On a lifetime, multiple lifetime scale. Now, what is so wild about this is that this group, the Capricorn group, is exactly 90 degrees to the transiting lunar nodes. This adds emphasis. This says that whatever this thing is, whatever this database you're getting, whatever this emotional unfurling of, this is what's been going on at least for four generations, is a turning point for the most important elements of your success, for your ability to deal with the entire world on your terms at all. And it's coming out of Capricorn, right? That's your seventh house. That's the house associated with marital partnerships and relationships for the sign Cancer and in the theme of Monday. It's not just you. It's not just Cancerians. And unfortunately, this is like the I would say punchline, but what's the opposite of punchline? The like, oh, the Achilles heel or something of the entire theme of Monday? Well, that are the relationships that should be about building a life and joy and pleasure end up essentially being these kinds of business partnerships. And they're business partnerships that contain a lot of problems coming from places out of our sight. Before I jump into the 7th and the 10th, where this affects, because it's the lunar nodes are in Aries and Libra for you. And I'm going to talk about both sides of this. And in the tradition of audio readings, this is going to go on for like well over an hour and 15 minutes because I am actually able to explain the chart. Alcohol. I've long wondered if you could take the amount of alcohol consumed in one day on the planet, by which I mean liquor, wine, and beer without mixers, how big of a lake would it fill? Well, I went looking for that a couple of weeks ago, and I contacted the some major beverage group and flashed my press card as the former editor of Kane's Beverage Week and mentioned my old boss's name. They never called me back. So I look around. I find out that in any year on planet Earth, 117 billion gallons of liquor, beer, and wine are consumed. Now, you may be familiar with my photographs of the Ashokan Reservoir that I like to put into Planet Waves quite a bit, this beautiful man-made lake that's about a 15-minute ride from my house. That is a reservoir that feeds New York City, and it contains 123 billion gallons of water. It is 12 miles. The surface is 8,000 acres. The maximum depth is 190 feet. That is how much alcohol is consumed in one year on the planet. This is a very serious problem. And I'm afraid, except for Alcoholics Anonymous, who I don't consider my best friends, this is an open secret. And so as part of this, and I know from various surveys and talking to many of my clients that there's a wide diversity of lifestyle and ethical frameworks that people have, I would say, at minimum, to become highly conscious of the impact of alcohol on your family, which usually manifests one way, emotional unavailability. And the impact of alcohol on your interpersonal relationships and on you. Just keep that on the kitchen counter where you can see it. I'm not saying take any special action. I'm not a teetotaler. I don't really drink very much, but I like to have one bottle of everything in the house. You know, just in case company comes over. But be aware. And I think that your awareness of particularly the crisis in families of alcohol will tell you everything you need to know to make any decision that you need to make. And remember that in this little zone, I'm going to circle it in pink. So you know what I'm talking about. I'm going to put a little arrow next to it too. Imagine that this is a balance upon which all of your success hinges. All of your ability to go forward. We come to astrology to go forward. We want to know about the future. We want to know what we're building for ourselves. Well, everything hangs in the balance on this. I'm going to very quickly address the South Node in the 4th and then get into the 10th where there's much more action. South Node is a kind of a clearing device. Fortunately, appropriately, helpfully, you have the South Node moving through the 4th place, Libra. This will help you let go of relationship tendencies of any kind that you don't want. It will help you acknowledge the ways in which the relationship tendencies of your early household influenced your relationship tendencies of your entire life up till the present moment, and basically provide you with a kind of a scaling and cleaning of this area of your life. And that, in turn, will help you identify a kind of emotional desperation that may be running through the family line, particularly the father's family line. But that said, it could, with the fourth and the tenth, it could be either or both parent. And it's crucial to check for both parents. And so what I'm describing as an emotional desperation is a parent on their deathbed saying, "My parents never touched me. They never showed me any affection." You're looking at them thinking, "My God, they've never said that before. That's what's been going on all these years? That was this smell of electrical wires burning? That's where it was coming from? God help us." Okay. Again, be aware. Pholus, a Shokan reservoir full of liquor, wine, and beer every year. 10th house, also connected to parents. And here is where there is an astounding amount of action. It is so much, I have not begun to wrap my mind about it. Even though I have been looking at this coming for years and I'm starting to dig into these charts. So let me start by saying that in my theory of the solar house system, this is all the annual readings, mid-year reading, spring reading, horoscope columns, all of the stuff done without a birth time. All the stuff based on sign of birth or rising sign, which is the territory that we're in now. I first discovered this here. Where Aries is placed in the solar chart is the place of self-actualization. It is where you're going to find yourself. And so the sign Aries lands in a different house for every sign. For Leo, it's the 9th. For Cancer, it's the 10th. For Gemini, it's the 11th. For Taurus, it's the 12th. And if you're one of the people who reads or listens to all the signs, you've heard me give this treatise many, many times before, because I pretty much put it into every reading to some extent. And where we find this for the sign Cancer, in the solar chart for Cancer, the chart for the sign, not the person, is that contrary to the idea that Cancer is just made out of pure homebody, aspiration is very important to the whole concept of Cancer. The need to change the world, to make your mark on the world, to be known for what you do, this is so crucial to your orientation on existence. And here is astrology that is relevant on a many generations scale. We could go back through various, you know, major phases of astrology since like 1940. We would find important concentrations in Aries and various places. But given the world now, and given how crucial understanding Aries is in the digital age, because my sense of Aries is that this is where the disembodiment is happening. This is where we are forgetting who we are, or having who we are colonized. There is a colonization process going on. The colonization is happening by digital, AI, artificial and enhanced reality. artificial intelligence, artificial this, artificial that, ChatGPT, all of these things that are lame but highly addictive attempts at synthetic humanity. That's going on in Aries. And we are heading for a reckoning, and you are heading for a reckoning where you will, I think, under the power of this astrology, you have a very good chance of claiming yourself back from this whole transhumanist project, this whole thing of humans aren't really people. We can just chop our bodies up to bits and inject a bunch of hormones, and we can claim that we're somebody that we're not. All the way out to all the different forms of cosmetic surgery, all the way out to all the different forms of multiple identities and all the loss of integrity and colonization from the digital realm, it would seem that you are in a position to be completely real with yourself and with the world. Now, the activity in Aries is not going to be new in 2025. It has been massive in 2024. That total solar eclipse conjunct Chiron, remember that? Well, that was April 8th? So that was the warm-up. That was the point of demarcation, the line in the sand, the saying, here we go. Okay. So you are not new to this. You've been experiencing it in Aries. It's been home to Chiron since 2018. All right. So now this comes into focus. And all of this stuff that's been going on in Pisces that maybe has seemed a little wishy-washy, that has seemed a little like, what do I really believe anyway, and all this stuff, that you're now cleaning up the edges of, it suddenly manifests in Aries, where you seek to find yourself as a member of the world and express yourself as a member of the world, to make your mark, to be known, to understand yourself. Very important part of self-actualization is having a sense of understanding yourself that is based on a lived relationship, not a theory in a book, not what the patent book of the dead is saying you're supposed to believe. Oh, this is what happens. And then that's what happens. Okay, that's all lovely. Maybe it's right. Maybe it's a bunch of fucking Chinese propaganda that was put into Tibetan literature. I mean that you actually grasp, that you can say, this is what I'm doing. This is what I want. This is what I want to do. This is the person I am. I am here to express myself. Well, this is coming, and it is coming strong. So I will have a more, it's going to take like 40,000 words to explain this, and maybe I'll get it down to a sentence in the process of that. But here we go. And that's the nature of Aries. Now, one last thing. If you hear that someone went on a rampage, breaking every window in the city of Kingston, that was me, because somebody said the word identity one too many times. And I went over to the sporting goods store and picked up an aluminum bat and then just broke all the windows because I was so pissed off. Identity politics. I'm probably not going to do that. Identity politics begins, as we know it, in the early 1970s, under the influence of the Chiron-Eris conjunction. The civil rights movement and the Vietnam War movement basically unravel into all these other little mini movements, the gay movement, the women's movement, the student movement, the environmental movement, the New Age movement, the Black Rights movement, the Puerto Rican Rights movement. You can probably name five more. All of this stuff, all of like, I have my movement, you have your movement. Well, geez, we're one human family all facing the same problems. Except for the, you know, people with the, you know, the titanium card, like Elon Musk, think they were going to build a rocket ship and go to Mars, which would be great. We should convince all the billionaires that the world is about to end. We should put them on a spaceship and send them to Mars without enough gas to get back and let them build a civilization made of bricks of $100 bills. Anyway, my slightly cynical side coming out. We do have a billionaire problem on the planet, by the way. But anyway, the identity politics movement, this feel-good, fuck-you movement, starts in the early 70s, and it's under the thrall of the Chiron-Eris conjunction. I'll be writing more about this. I've written a little about it. There were two 1960s for astrology students. One 1960s was under the influence of the Uranus-Pluto conjunction of 65-66. The other 1960s was the late 1960s was under the influence of the Chiron-Eris conjunction of 71-72. And that's kind of where things get self-indulgent and messed up. And the news, you know, the news media were calling it the me generation, the me generation. Yeah, well, that makes sense. Chiron conjunct Eris and Aries. And here we are back again, because Eris takes so long to get through Aries that Chiron can come all the way back 51 years later and make a second conjunction. And that's what's going to happen in 2025. And so what I am saying is get your house in order. Understand what your priorities are. Decide what you want to do. You will be emerging in a position of leadership, at minimum, leadership by example. This absolutely necessary thing that we all must take to heart and realize that the words we say don't matter one fucking bit compared to the actions that we take. When children see parents say one thing and do another thing, the action is what registers. And then the contradiction is what registers, and then the words serve as a source of conflict because they contradict the action and they form the tension point between the words and the action. And the 10th is a very important house of parenting and having been parented. So There's no way to sum this up without saying cliche, being cliche, but I will borrow a term from human design. And that term is inner authority. It is essential that you make contact with, become familiar with, learn about, and understand your inner authority. You must be your own master. You must have integrated your idea of who you are to the point where you express that idea. This takes a lot of practice. Most people have spent so much time and so much energy compromising their sense of compromising their inner authority, letting their doctor tell them what to do. Tank that medicine. Get that operation. Do this. Inject your children. Well, if you were listening to your inner authority, there's a very good chance that any time an outer authority tried to get you to do something, that it was something other than what your inner authority was saying. This is what you need. This is what to do. So I would say become your inner authority. Maybe find somebody good in HD who can tell you a little bit about the way that your inner authority manifests. I am not an HD reader, but I have found there to be significant wisdom in it. I don't really study it, but I like this concept a lot. The concept of the inner authority, a real thing, the thing that knows, that is you, who knows what your life is about. There are many different ways to express this, but I think that the most succinct is the concept of inner authority. All right. A couple of more concepts. First house. You have two new slow-moving presences in very early Cancer. Things that are here as guides and things that are here as teachers and things that are here as exemplars and as things that will help you do this work of the 10th house, which is finding your way in the world. I'm trying to draw this glyph for the planet Asbolus. I think the fourth centaur. I don't go crazy on the centaurs. There's like 75 of them. And I find that we have enough information from like basically the first five. That's more than enough. Asbolus is about what all life has in common. It is always a fair question in any situation you're in with other living beings on the planet to ask what you have in common with those beings. I am close to animals. I really understand animals. I don't see dogs and their needs being much different than my own. I no longer live with dogs. Now I've always had a lot of, well, in the last 15 years, I've got a heck of a lot of plants in my apartment, and I find myself saying hello to them, watering them and talking to them and telling them how much I love them. What does all life have in common? I will leave this open as a philosophical question for you, but this becomes a central feature in your character. Second thing is that there is a new element, again, slow mover, very long visitor, very early in the sign, called chaos. Chaos is not like pandemonium in the streets. Chaos is the consort of, it is a creation god from Greek mythology. It is the cosmos itself. It is the yin force, the creative force. I've read these myths. I don't really remember them, but I'm familiar with the energetics of the planet Chaos. And the idea with Chaos, again, this is a 300-year orbit, approximately one band out from Pluto. Creation, that in that realm, called the classical Kuiper objects, gods of creation and goddesses. Well, this is the primordial void. And this is saying, you know, remember, you're part of the primordial void. You contain the primordial void. Have a relationship to the primordial void. And remember that this is one of the things that you have in common with all things, is a relationship to the primordial void. Okay. One other thing in Cancer, then I'm going to finish up with houses 2 and 8. Trans-Neptunian point TNP, one of the weird planets without a body, Kronos. Kronos has been in Cancer now for about 20 years. It's not even halfway done. This is saying, learn to respect yourself. I was Googling around today, and I came across the Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And in that, which I think is pretty good, even though I would maybe rearrange it a little bit, but it's like some of these concepts are good as starting points. We can say, oh, let's start there, but then like cut it in half and rearrange the parts. But what I got today was it has one layer for the concept of esteem, respecting yourself and others, not self-esteem as its own thing, but the general concept of esteem, meaning the ability to respect, to honor, to look up to, esteem. Big concept, Kronos in Cancer. All right, houses 2 and 8. This is the resources area. And I will cover this only briefly, but enough to go with. And I'm going to boil this down to a tangible suggestion. By mid-autumn, get your financial house in order. Straighten things out. Get out of as much debt as you can. My readers tend to have less rather than more, according to a survey conducted about 15 years ago. I don't know how that's changed. And get the money thing in order. It will be worth it. There is a stage of reduce, compact, make efficient, make the most of the resources that you have, and make sure that your affairs with the government are on good terms. File any back past due paperwork. Make sure that, you know, your bookkeeping is good. Do all of that stuff. Because the second and the eighth become very active later in this year and into 2025, where these matters are kind of wagered. And your 10th becomes extremely active in the spring of 2025. And that means that you are going to be visible. You are going to have a higher level of involvement and activity. There's going to be basically more energy flowing through this particular conduit of your life. And so there is this note of caution. Get it together. Sort out the shoebox. Get the files in order. Make sure you have at least one good conversation with your accountant, should you be fortunate enough to have one. It is a good idea to have an accountant. Make sure you have the right accountant. I do not believe in mortals filing tax forms in the United States. It is very, very complicated and stupid. Made to be ridiculous. You need somebody who's going to tell you what's going on. You need to know what schedules you're filing and all of that stuff. And this theme carries into basically, for many of us, the rest of our lives. I'd be thrilled to live through the end of Pluto in Aquarius. That's in 2044. I'll be 80 when Pluto gets out of Aquarius. So that's a while. And there's more to say about that. I've probably gone through a lot of this and somewhere in between and the spring reading. I try not to repeat myself too much, and I try to do a fresh reading every time. I am certain I have done some very detailed work about Pluto in the eighth, particularly in somewhere in between. Here, too, is the impact of digital. I think that you maybe want to be diversified. If you are fortunate enough to have enough money to diversify, I think there should be some metal, there should be some cash, there should be some investments of various different kinds, maybe a little land, maybe a little crypto, who knows, maybe you've got three houses. But diversify, and diversify with a mind of migrating as much out of digital as you can. You can't get out of it totally. You have to pay an extra $5 a month. Is it to get the bank statement or to not get the bank statement? What do they hit you for the $5 for? I don't remember. They're not making it easy. They are trying to suck us all into central bank digital currency. I would humbly suggest kick, scream, ignore, obfuscate, resist on the central bank digital. You don't want the money that doesn't let you buy a pizza because you haven't also filled your Lipitor prescription. That's central bank digital currency. They decide you can't spend money 20 miles away from your house. Your Visa card works everywhere. $100 bills work anywhere in the world. So a lot of getting that stuff in order and making sure that your finances make sense to you. I have always found that it is better to know your situation, no matter how bad you think it is, than it is to not know your situation. Because the not knowing comes with a layer of confusion as well as the situation itself. But the knowing eliminates most of the confusion and then adds actual, actionable data. And that is what you need in these very wild times that we are living through. All right, I'm going to leave it here. And I will be looking for your questions in the comment area, or you can email cs@planetwaves.net. Eli or I will see them, and we will work with them. And even one good question can be the theme of the entire Afterthoughts presentation. So keep that in mind. I'm not really feeling like doing any video today, so I'm going to scratch that right now. I'm going to leave it here. I've made my contribution to the astrology of the fourth sign. thank you for your business, and thank you especially for your trust, trusting me with these ideas that I say that go into your mind and cannot really come out of your mind. I try to be at my very best doing these, and I'll catch you a little bit further down life's highway. Happy birthday. Lots of love. And bye, friends.